Well, first of all, Ian, thank you very much for agreeing to join us on Phoenix FM this morning. I was just checking my records. We last spoke in February 2014, and I distinctly remember you saying then that you still had the enthusiasm and the energy you had in 1967. 3.5 years later, is that still the case?
Well, that was a brave statement then. It would be an equally, arguably an even braver statement today. But, you know, the energy thing never really seems to fail me. I can remember being on stage at the Marquee Club in 1968, being absolutely shagged out when I, you know, went back to what passed for a dressing room, which was a broom cupboard at the back. And, you know, not much else changes, but the, you know, the point is you go out there and you push yourself physically and mentally to the limits, and that's what you do.
And it's something you very much enjoy.
I'm not a tournament tennis player or a Formula One racing driver, so I don't have to live up to quite those heady heights of excellence in terms of, you know, physical and mental prowess. But the mental bit still requires a lot of focus and, you know, a lot of attention to detail. So perhaps that's one of the things that does help keep you physically going as well. You know, the mental thing is where it all starts, and then the physical thing is just about staying in shape and continuing to ride the bicycle. If you fall off it at my age, you might not be able to get back on and pedal into the sunset, so I try and keep reasonably active.
You're starting a new tour in 2018, and this is the 50th anniversary tour, and this is a tour where you're going to play virtually songs from your back catalogue over all of those years. The hardest job you must have, surely, is choosing what to play, and how have you done that?
Well, the tour is sort of unending. I mean, I'm just taking a little break next week, and then we're off to a German tour, and following that we go to South America, and then off to the USA, and then to Poland, and then some cathedral concerts in the UK, and then it's 2018, and we start off in Dubai, and then go to Russia, and then we have some dates in the UK, which I guess is what you're referring to, and they are from, you know, 2018 onwards, officially the Jethro Tull 50th anniversary, so I'm focusing more in that year on the first decade, really, of Jethro Tull's works. It is all about repertoire. I mean, you can't get 33 people onto the stage, because that's how many musicians have passed through our ranks since the beginning. So it's really about the repertoire, and I think because of that first decade being the period of time when Jethro Tull got to a degree of prominence in many countries all over the world, that seems to be the focus, I think, for the repertoire next year. This year's a little broader, you know, we play some newer material as well, but essentially, you know, life is a best of tour in many ways. There are, from time to time, more focused conceptual performances. Mm-hmm. In 2016 it was the Jethro Tull rock opera. In 2014 it was the Homo Erraticus tour. In 2012 it was the Thick as a Brick 1 and 2 tours, and prior to that we've done tours where we focused on the Aqualung album, perhaps, or orchestral tours with the symphony orchestra. So, you know, there are sometimes you focus on a specific way of presenting things, but mostly I think if you look back at 49 and a half years of touring, then you could describe most of the concert sets as being essentially a best of presentation. Okay. Things that are representative of the different rhythms, tempos, musical stylings and influences that have formed the songs that I've written over the years, and that's what I do today, that's what I will be doing tomorrow.
You're rumoured to be writing, or have written, or have half completed a new album, but not due for release for 2019. Is that true?
I was going to release it at the beginning of next year, but because of the, I suppose, my rather late in the day and slightly reluctant intention in regard to recognizing, let alone celebrating 50 years of music, I was, you know, thinking originally about it, but it would be a bit of an extraneous piece of work in a year where you are definitely looking back and looking back in the slightly nostalgic way. So I'm not an anniversary or birthday guy, so I probably opportunity to join in with, I suppose, what fans and indeed agents and promoters like, because it's a marketing position. You know, you're out there with something to sell. That I was just asked today if I would do a couple of shows with another band in the USA next year in Los Angeles and in New York, and it was the band Yes. Oh. And I noticed, I suppose I should have realized, it was pretty obvious, it's also their 50th anniversary.
Yes,
because
of course,
they started at the Marquee Club about 2 weeks before we did.
Yes, I spoke to Steve Howland
so
quite recently.
You know, that's kind of creeping up on all of us these days.
It is. And when you look back, has that 50 years flown by for you? Do you sometimes have to pinch yourself and think, really? Was it 1973 I did that, or what?
Well, it's all pretty well documented, so and it's pretty regularly the case that I have to go back and look at things from particular venues and tours and performances and albums, and if you're remixing and remastering and working on things that perhaps you did 30, 40 years ago, then you're never far away from them. Plus, of course, some of that material is being played live on stage, and therefore it doesn't seem like 40 years ago. It seems like last week.
Yeah.
And, you know, last week I played a piece of music I wrote at the Marquee Club in February of 1968. And so that's a piece of music that in one way could be very nostalgic, very much a piece of history, but because I played it every night for the last few months, then it's a contemporary piece of Jethro Tull live performance music. And I think that's the way that you link things
yes.
together. It's not really about looking back and remembering things, you know, remember the time when stories while you crack open another can of beer on the porch with your old buddies. It's not that at all, because it's very much to the fore. It's stuff that is the musical currency of today, and as far as I'm concerned, so it's never far from my, not just far from my heart, but far from my fingertips and my memory, because I have to focus on all this stuff and make sure I play all the right notes in more or less the right order.
Who you've played with some astonishing musicians over the last 50 years. Who has given you that wow factor? Who have you looked at and gone, wow, I'm so pleased to be on stage with this person?
Well, apart from the guys who were members of the band, you know, I've had the opportunity to play A Whiter Shade of Pale with Gary Brooker, House of the Rising Sun with Eric Burden, Nights in White Satin with Justin Hayward, with Jack Bruce, Sunshine of Your Love, and with John Lord, Smoke on the Water. So, you know, when you get an opportunity to play on the songs that you recognize being really iconic rock songs, going back to before I was a musician, in the case of Eric Burden, I was still a schoolboy then, or in the case of, you know, sometimes performing on somebody's recent work. You know, last year, for example, I played on earlier this year, I played on a on a new song from Mark Almond, and he's somebody from really different generation, from the 80s, from the world
yes,
of,
absolutely.
I suppose, synth pop, and you know, to have the opportunity to stretch out and play on other people's stuff, it's a great honour, but it's also quite scary, because you've got to do it justice. You know, you've got to try and find that difficult place for yourself as an interloper, because frankly, you know, there isn't really a lot of scope for flute on most of the stuff that I've ended up playing on. So you've got to find a way to integrate it into the existing musical parts of the arrangement without it being too intrusive or grabbing too much attention. It's a delicate art.
When you're writing music, you play a wide variety of instruments. Do you write mainly on the guitar and then think of flute parts later, or what's the process for you?
Well, probably mostly on the acoustic guitar, because it's an instrument you have to hand and in a hotel room or you know, wherever it might be. It's the easy one for starting off with. But there are occasions when things have come to me as melodies in my head, you know, perhaps sitting on an airplane or walking down the street. The same with lyrics. You know, you get an idea for a title or a topic, perhaps, and then you develop that later. And sometimes there are lines that are melodic lines that come to me, first of all, by playing the flute. And then I have to think of a way to make that into a more complete musical piece by introducing the elements of harmony and rhythm, which along with melody are the essential ingredients of music. Toss in lyrics and you've got a song.
Wow. Describe to me, if you can, a non-music Ian Anderson day. What does Ian Anderson do to relax and switch off sometimes?
Well, hide under the bed, I suppose, mostly these days. It's a scary world we live in. But next week, in fact, I'm on vacation. My wife and I are heading off for a brief holiday in Portugal.
Oh, and so am I. That's a coincidence.
I was just recently doing a concert. And curiously, I quite often end up being somewhere to do a job of work, and then a month or two later, I'm back there having a holiday, or perhaps the other way around. But you see it from a completely different standpoint when you actually become a tourist, just like everybody else, and that's sometimes quite relaxing and a little weird, because my travel around the world in doing concert tours and so on, it's a different way of getting to know people and places. But when you go as a tourist, you really do have an eye-opening experience, because you do get to do the things that you can't possibly fit into the brief period of time when you're there doing a concert. And that, in a way, is rather reassuring, that you just get to be like everybody else and join the crocodile queue on a tour to see the sights and the cathedrals and the museums of some city that maybe I've been to already 20 times in my life.
Yeah, okay. Right, well, the tour is, you've got the cathedral tour, which is, I believe, a three-city tour, which is already, I think Bradford sold out already. And then, of course, you've got the 50th anniversary tour, and which finalises on the 17th of April at the Royal Albert Hall. What a fabulous venue to play.
I first played in the Albert Hall in early 1969, and it was a little strange, because it was and still is that iconic London venue that was built perhaps with architectural ignorance as regard the acoustics, and anything that's a dome, whether it's the Albert Hall or even worse, St Paul's Cathedral, I mean, it's a musical nightmare. So I remember the first time in the Albert Hall finding it quite tricky to play, and that's changed a little bit for the better as they introduced, I think back in the 70s, the so-called flying saucers to try and tame the acoustics of the dome. But it's still not one of the great sounding venues. I think when you go to the Albert Hall, it's about the atmosphere and the nature of being in that wonderful Victorian monstrosity, and so in choosing a place to play in our 50th anniversary year, it seemed maybe that was the best option, and I think we played there enough times to know how to get the best the acoustic challenge of making it sound okay.
On my iPod, I have 10 favourite albums, and I have to tell you, Songs from the Wood is in that list, so it's constantly there. And an album, one of my all-time favourite albums, it's just wonderful. And thank you for that.
Well, thank you for the compliment. It's an album that was re-released in its box set glory this year, remixed by Stephen Wilson in stereo and 5.1 surround, along with a lot of goodies and booklets and stuff for the fans. And hot on its heels in the early part of next year is the subsequent album, Heavy Horses, which yep. Is actually all complete. It's all wrapped up, you know, artwork and the stereo mixes. It's just that Stephen is a busy boy with a new album released and tours to get underway, so he's not yet been able to do the 5.1 surround mixes on Heavy Horses. So it's pushed us into 2018 for the anniversary special edition of Heavy Horses, which is perhaps in a way more apt, because that came out in 1978, so it is indeed the anniversary year for Heavy Horses too, albeit just a 40th, a mere 40th.
Enjoy your time in Portugal. I may see you there. I'm going as well, funny enough, but mine with golf clubs. Have a great time.
You won't be seeing me on the golf club. That's fair enough. That's for those strange people who have the obsession about banging balls and getting them to sink in a small hole.
Absolutely.
My son-in-law is an avid golfer and quite often attempts to attract me in that direction. But,
it's not for you, though.
Sorry?
It's not for you, then.
It's not really for me. It's one of those things. I have, since being a child, been in possession of a Mashie Niblick, so I know my way around the elements of golf. But it just doesn't seduce me. Neither does fishing. You know, these seem to me like retirement sports, and I'm afraid I'm not quite ready for
You're not retired at all, Ian. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
It's a pleasure. Nice to talk to you. Take care.
And as I said, I've said to you 3.5 years ago, if you'd completely failed as a musician, you'd have made it as a broadcaster, because I just love your speaking voice. It's gorgeous. I will see you, hopefully, if not in Portugal, I'll see you at the Royal Albert Hall on the 17th. Good luck with the tour. Good luck with the cathedral tour as well. And we'll speak to you in the future. Thank you very much
indeed. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you so much.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.